Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster, and this episode on Thursday, August 13th, 2026, will feature articles that appeared in the Arizona Mirror over the past week. Since this program airs only once a week, some of the articles may be a bit dated, and breaking stories may be added toward the end. The Arizona Mirror is an independent publication which sources stories from all over the state and the nation. We will focus primarily on stories that impact people in Arizona. In this week's episode, these are some of the stories we'll be reading. Katie Hobbs names John Giles as her running mate in a play for crossover voters. Top Republicans embrace anti-trans measure as a wedge in November races. Voucher critics tell Supreme Court GOP voucher measure is an unconstitutional Trojan horse. LGBTQ advocates prep for a difficult campaign against Protect Girls Sports in Arizona Act. And let's get started. We're starting off with Election 2026. Katie Hobbs names John Giles as her running mate in a play for crossover voters. The ex-Mesa mayor and vocal GOP critic is an overture to the moderate and independent voters Hobbs needs in November. By Caitlin Sievers, August 11, 2026. Former Republican and Mesa mayor John Giles is Governor Katie Hobbs' pick for lieutenant governor. Giles, a Republican turned independent, was rumored to be Hobbs' top choice for weeks, but the Democrat finally made the announcement early Tuesday. At a time when too many politicians are focused on partisan politics, Arizona deserves a lieutenant governor who shares my commitment to putting Arizona first and delivering real results, Hobbs said in a statement. This year is the first that Arizona gubernatorial candidates must pick a running mate after voters in 2022 created the position of lieutenant governor, who will succeed the governor if they cannot finish their four-year term. Hobbs' choice for lieutenant governor is an overture to moderate Republicans and right-leaning independent voters whose vote she'll need to win what's expected to be a close race against Republican U.S. Representative Andy Biggs. Chuck Coughlin, a veteran lobbyist and political consultant who has worked on multiple Republican gubernatorial campaigns, told the Arizona Mirror that he thinks Giles is, quote, a great pick for lieutenant governor. The guy's a genuinely nice person, Coughlin said. He was elected mayor in Mesa twice. He's well regarded amongst the nonpartisan element of the state as a problem solver. And he sees the Republican Party for its dysfunction today and decided to leave. Giles, who was a registered Republican until May, when he registered as an independent, has for years been a vocal critic of his own party's turn toward extremism. In 2024, he endorsed Democratic candidates U.S. Representative Ruben Gallego and Kamala Harris, and even spoke at the Democratic National Convention in support of Harris. In 2022, he was censured by a local precinct of the Republican Party when he backed Democratic U.S. Senator Mark Kelly for a second term in the U.S. Senate. That same year, he backed Hobbs in the gubernatorial race against Carrie Lake. Hobbs will need support from Arizona's large block of independent voters to win in November, to make up for Republicans' significant voter registration advantage of about 313,000 voters. As of July, 35% of Arizona's registered voters were Republicans, 28% were Democrats, and 34% were independents, according to the Secretary of State's office. This is a very simple equation, Stacy Pearson, a Democratic campaign consultant, told the Mirror. Democrats in Arizona can't win statewide without Republican and independent crossover. It's impossible. And Pearson believes Giles can win over those crucial votes. Giles has taken a very courageous anti-extremist position, and that's exactly what Arizona voters are looking for, she said. Pearson pointed out that during general elections over the past 10 years, Arizonans have increasingly voted for Democrats over far-right Republicans like Lake, for example. Each victory for statewide Democrats has been the direct result of appeals to independents and moderate Republicans, Pearson said, pointing to Democrats winning races for governor, secretary of state, and attorney general in 2024 as examples. Arizona's Democratic Attorney General Chris Mays, another former Republican, praised Hobbs' choice. "I'm proud to have Mayor Giles with us on the ballot," she wrote in a social media post. "He's always put Arizonans first before partisan politics, and he will continue to do so as our lieutenant governor." In a video accompanying the announcement, Hobbs and Giles focused on putting positive change for Arizonans ahead of partisan politics. "I was a lifelong Republican before becoming an independent, because extremists shouldn't stand in the way of getting things done," Giles said in the video. He touted his background of revitalizing Mesa's downtown, improving public education, and bringing more businesses to the city. In a written statement, Giles said he and Hobbs both share the belief that leadership is about bringing people together and getting results. "I'm proud to stand with her to put Arizona first, find common ground, and keep moving our state forward," he added. The Biggs campaign sharply criticized Hobbs' choice, saying that Giles had been a, quote, aspiring Democrat since he voted for Joe Biden for president in 2020. As Kamala Harris's favorite Arizona mayor, Giles is aligned with Hobbs on all the issues that have hurt Arizonans the most over the past 4 years, Drew Sexton, an advisor for the Big campaign, said in a statement. Sexton called out Giles for praising Biden's border policy, supporting federal COVID relief, and for voting in favor of Mesa's non-discrimination ordinance protecting members of the LGBTQ community. Biggs last month announced former Arizona Senator Sina Kerr as his pick for lieutenant governor. A dairy farmer from Buckeye, Kerr served in the state Senate from 2018 to 2024 and was appointed in May 2025 by the Trump administration to serve as the state's executive director of the USDA Farm Service Agency. The Biggs campaign touted that Kerr's mother is a naturalized citizen from Mexico, an overture to the state's large Latino population. Coughlin described Kerr, a conservative Republican from a conservative area, as having less broad appeal than Giles. "I think it reinforces the view of what Biggs is, and he's apparently very happy with that," Coughlin said. "And he's going to sell that. He's going to sell the fact that we need a Republican leading the state." With such a significant voter registration advantage, Biggs has a shot of winning without picking a running mate who will appeal to the masses, Coughlin added. And that concludes this first story. Katie Hobbs names John Giles as her running mate in a play for crossover voters. Our second story, top Republicans embrace anti-trans measure as a wedge in November races. The Republican nominees call Prop 318 an, quote, 80-20 issue, betting the anti-trans proposal will drive voters to the polls. By Gloria Rebecca Gomez, August 10, 2026. The Republican candidates hoping to flip Arizona's top three statewide positions in November are lining up behind an anti-trans ballot measure that critics say will force schools to police bathrooms and locker rooms. Proposition 318, which GOP lawmakers name the, quote, Protect Girls Sports in Arizona, threatens schools and athletic associations with lawsuits if trans girls are allowed to join a team designated for girls. Arizona law already forbids transgender girls from joining school sports teams consistent with their gender identity. But the new proposal would extend the prohibition to private youth recreational organizations like Little League Baseball. It would also require schools and athletic associations to ensure that bathrooms, locker rooms, shower rooms, and other, quote, private spaces aren't used by people of the opposite biological sex, which opponents argue will lead to intrusive enforcement policies. The school facilities separated by biological sex are restricted if they're, quote, integral to athletic engagement, which pulls in facilities used by athletic teams and even affects members of the public who visit during sporting events. Critics say the language may even be used to apply the rule to all of a school's bathrooms. While proponents of Prop 318 argue that allowing trans girls to play on girls' athletic teams will result in cisgender girls missing out on opportunities, LGBTQ advocates say it's creating a solution for a problem that doesn't exist. Between 2017 and 2022, when Arizona's trans athletic ban was passed, the Arizona Interscholastics Association approved just 16 applications from transgender students to play on teams consistent with their gender identity. About half of those appeals were from trans girls. The AIA oversees more than 170,000 student-athletes across the state. Republicans across the country have advanced anti-trans proposals to rile up voters and recruit their support for key races. November will be the first time the political strategy is tested in Arizona. While it's still too early to tell if the controversial proposal will draw voters to the polls, previous research on the issue suggests a majority of voters in the Grand Canyon state would approve of the ballot measure. In 2023, a joint survey conducted in partnership with Arizona State University, Stanford University, and the University of Houston found that 63% of voters in Arizona disagreed with trans participation in women's sports, and 54% opposed trans people using bathrooms that aligned with their gender identity. During a Monday news conference promoting the ballot measure, Republican nominees for governor, secretary of state, and attorney general announced their full-throated support of the proposal, highlighting the public perception of the topic. "This is an 80-20 issue," said U.S. Representative Andy Biggs, who is running to unseat Governor Katie Hobbs. "The Democrat delegation is completely out of touch on this issue," echoed Gilbert Republican Warren Peterson, who is aiming to convince voters to award him the Attorney General's office. "It's a very common sense idea that almost everybody outside of politics can agree on," said State Representative Alex Colladan, the Republican nominee for Secretary of State. Biggs and Peterson both face contests in a state where the Democratic incumbents won 4 years ago by narrow margins. In 2022, Chris Mays was elected Attorney General by a mere 280 votes, while Hobbs won by just over a percentage point. In a bid to set themselves apart from their Democratic rivals, Biggs and Peterson sought to label them as unfit to lead because of their unwillingness to restrict trans girls from playing sports. Biggs lamented the need to go to voters in November to enshrine the provisions in Prop 318 into state law, saying that Hobbs had the opportunity to do so more easily, but failed. Hobbs has consistently vetoed anti-LGBTQ legislation sent to her by the Republican majority legislature, including several bills that would have barred trans students from using school facilities consistent with their gender identity. A large part of the reason Republicans crafted Prop 318 was to circumvent that veto power. "She puts in jeopardy the opportunity for fair, competitive athletics for women, and it's really astounding," Biggs said. The existing law that forbids trans girls from participating in school sports in a way that reflects who they are was passed before Hobbs was elected. Since then, Republicans have not pushed legislation to further restrict trans athletes that Hobbs could weigh in on, instead focusing on the use of school facilities. Peterson similarly criticized Mays over her refusal to defend Arizona's trans athlete ban, saying it amounts to supporting, quote, men playing in women's sports. In 2023, two trans girls filed a lawsuit against the law that prevented them from playing with their cisgender peers. Mays, who is charged with defending the laws passed by lawmakers, declined to do so. Peterson, along with then-Speaker of the House of Representatives Ben Thoma, took up the challenge instead. During her tenure, Mays has also refused to go to bat for other state laws, most notably those that restrict abortion care, including a Civil War-era law that outlawed virtually all abortions, and a ban on abortions performed after 15 weeks of pregnancy. Peterson, who fought to preserve those laws, too, has frequently pointed to May's decision not to back them as proof that she shouldn't be given another four-year term. But Delaney Corcoran, May's campaign manager, dismissed Peterson's criticisms of the Democrats' choice to step back from the lawsuit against Arizona's trans athlete ban as nothing more than an attempt to deflect from the problems voters actually care about. These attacks are designed to divide and distract Arizonans from the issues that matter most to Arizonans and their families, she said. Peterson called on voters to support Prop 318, touting it as a long-term solution to trans sports participation that can't be undone by future legislatures. Democrats have for years tried to flip control of the state legislature without success. The party hopes voter discontent with the Trump administration will yield a different result in November. But if voters approve Prop 318, even a Democratic majority won't be able to walk its provisions back unless the party wins a supermajority. That's because the Arizona Constitution requires a 3/4 supermajority vote before lawmakers make any change to a measure passed by voters. And that change must advance the measure's original intent, ruling out any attempt to replace Prop 318's provisions with trans-inclusive policies. That could only be done by sending the question directly to voters. Campaigns heat up. Before voters have a chance to weigh in on what the future looks like for trans students and athletes, political campaigns aiming to persuade Arizonans on how to cast their ballots are beginning to make their pitches to voters. The Protect Girls Sports in Arizona is heading a Yes on 318 campaign. Its website includes a webpage entitled, quote, Rational Voices, with quotes on opposition to trans athletic participation from figures like Bill Maher, Caitlyn Jenner, and Meghan McCain. The committee also released an ad on Monday, posted onto its website and YouTube, that spotlights a viral clip of a Massachusetts girls basketball game in which an allegedly trans player can be seen shoving down an opponent while wrestling the ball away. Vote yes on Prop 318 to protect girls' sports and female spaces from those pretending to be someone they're not, says a voiceover as the video plays. When the Massachusetts girls basketball video went viral in 2024, opponents of trans sports participation seized on it to justify discriminatory policies. LGBTQ advocates responded by noting that one athlete's poor sportsmanship should not be used to villainize an entire group. On the same day that the ad was published, supporters of the Arizona ballot measure sent a letter to Fontes alleging that a new website advocating against Prop 318 has violated state election laws and should be referred to the state attorney general for legal action. The website shares a near-identical logo and color scheme with the pro-Prop 318 campaign, and also closely mimics its URL. The anti-Prop 318 site has the URL protectgirlssportsaz.vote, while the pro-Prop 318 site uses protectgirlssportsinaz.vote. GOP election attorney Timothy Lasota, a campaign chairman for Yes on 318, wrote in his complaint to Fontes that the anti-Prop 318 campaign is defrauding voters. Under state law, intentionally misleading voters is punished with a Class 5 felony. This group is also making the ridiculous claim that a no vote protects girls' sports in Arizona, Lasota wrote. It is a clear attempt to trick and defraud voters into voting against Proposition 318. Lasota also pointed out that the website has no information about which groups are funding it and does not have a required statement disclosing who paid for the website, raising questions about campaign finance violations because no campaign finance reports have been filed on behalf of an Associated Political Action Committee either. Despite vocal criticisms of the website on Monday, however, Republicans expressed a lack of confidence that state leaders would take action. Mays has been incessantly not defending our laws, so it's hard to have any faith in this, Peterson said. And that concludes this story. Top Republicans embrace anti-trans measure as a wedge in November races. Our next story, voucher critics tell Supreme Court GOP voucher measure is an unconstitutional, quote, Trojan horse. They warn upholding Prop 145 would hand future lawmakers a playbook to quietly invalidate laws and initiatives. By Jim Small, August 10, 2026. Public school advocates hoping to rein in the Grand Canyon State's billion-dollar universal private school voucher program told the Arizona Supreme Court that Republican legislators hoping to weaponize the popularity of protecting money for military families to gut a citizens' initiative and rewire the separation of power. Proposition 145 is ostensibly about protecting money for students in families where a parent is in the military, who make up less than 1% of all voucher recipients, and it would amend the state constitution to bar any law that confiscates any unspent voucher money awarded to those students. But it also says that if any law doing so is approved after November 1 of this year, then the entirety of that law, not just the provision affecting students in military families, is voided. And that means that Proposition 212, the Protect Education Act, would immediately be struck down if voters approve it in the November 3rd election. That measure would place guardrails on universal private school voucher system that is used by roughly 100,000 Arizona students. Its reforms include background checks and safety standards for private schools taking voucher money, a $150,000 income cap for students to access the vouchers, and restrictions on spending voucher money on luxury items. But it would also take back unspent voucher funds for all students that families are saving for college tuition, which is currently allowed, and outlaw the practice going forward. The result, attorneys Sambo Duell and Austin Yost wrote on behalf of the Protect Education Accountability Now Committee, is that Proposition 145 is a Trojan horse that attempts to smuggle multiple constitutional amendments in furtherance of an ulterior purpose past the voters under the guise of protecting military families. And this, they argued, is exactly the pernicious log-rolling the Arizona Constitution's separate amendment rules exist to stop. That rule demands that proposed constitutional amendments be limited to a single action. The Protect Education Accountability Now Committee, which is behind Prop 212, sued to remove Prop 145 from the ballot for violating that constitutional rule. Last month, Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Joseph Creamer agreed and ruled it unconstitutional because it bootstrapped the broad language barring any future voucher regulation or reforms onto a narrowly tailored measure. Lawmakers, he noted, have never before tried to openly bar voters or future legislatures from enacting laws in the way they hope to with Prop 145. Republican legislative leaders argued to the Supreme Court last week that even if Prop 145 did preemptively nullify Prop 212 in the name of protecting military families, something they didn't concede, it wouldn't matter. And if they wanted to, legislators could have fully barred any future legislature or ballot measure from imposing any regulations whatsoever on empowerment scholarship accounts, the formal name for the voucher program. But that's just not true, Dewell and Yost argue. The first section of Prop 145 fully protects military scholarships by making any confiscation of any unspent money unconstitutional, while the second section reaches to any number of other provisions that don't affect military families at all, but is only triggered if the law in question violates the first section. Subsection B's exclusive purpose is to invalidate, by mere association, provisions having nothing to do with confiscating military family scholarship funds, they wrote in their answering brief. The two provisions cannot stand or fall as a whole because the first section stands fine on its own and the second section exists only to reach beyond the scope of the first section, meaning it violates the rule that constitutional amendments be limited to a single action. And beyond that, the anti-voucher committee told justices, the GOP legislators and their allies have already acknowledged in legal filings that the goal of Prop 145 is to override a competing statutory initiative, and one of the pro-voucher attorneys admitted during oral arguments that Prop 145 would invalidate Prop 212. On top of that, if the Supreme Court upholds the unprecedented inclusion of a provision that bans all potential legislation on a topic, Dewell and Yost said it will be giving a green light to a playbook for future legislatures or groups of citizens wishing to surreptitiously invalidate laws or initiatives. For instance, they posited a hypothetical constitutional amendment titled the Protect Children from Sexual Predators Act, which bans state funding of any program lacking background checks for adults with unsupervised contact with children that is paired with a similar total invalidation clause. Because private schools aren't required to conduct those background checks, the result would be wiping out the entire ESA voucher program under the guise of protecting children from sexual predators. Future legislatures and citizens groups proposing a ballot measure would be foolish not to borrow this deceptive formula, and the mischief could extend far beyond ESAs, Dewell and Yost wrote. They also rebutted the claim by attorneys representing two military families that use vouchers that Prop 145 merely consists of a rule and a consequence, thus making it a single amendment. If a proposed amendment established a right to abortion in the first section, then declared in the next that any new law violating it would mean the next governor is appointed by the president of the Arizona Senate instead of an election, the consequence is clearly dependent on the first section. Calling something a consequence doesn't answer whether it shares a common purpose, Dewell and Yost wrote. And the Protect Education Accountability Now Committee said the Supreme Court should see the GOP legislative argument that Prop 145 is constitutional because it could be compressed into a single sentence, thus proving it isn't two separate amendments for what it is, a quote, Hail Mary of a legal argument. Recognizing the shortfalls of Prop 145 as drafted, legislative appellants invented a new theory during oral argument that now serves as the thrust of their entire appeal, its attorneys wrote. It is telling that the legislature cannot defend HCR 2048 as written, instead asking this court to analyze it as if it were written differently. And even if it were written as a single sentence, Juul and Yost argued, it would still be unconstitutional because it serves two different purposes. It would still create a new substantive right as a front to force wholesale invalidation of legislation having no bearing on that right, they concluded. Republican lawmakers and the military family parents have until the end of Tuesday to file their reply briefs with the court. And that concludes this story. Voucher critics tell Supreme Court GOP voucher measure is an unconstitutional Trojan horse. A reminder that you're listening to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. Moving on to the second half of our program, we're back to election 2026. Democrats target two more Arizona races to bid to end GOP's 60-year grip on the legislature. National Dems say control of the Capitol is, quote, within striking distance after falling short with record spending in 2024. By Jared McDonald, Evoy, August 12, 2026. National Democrats are expanding the list of races at the Arizona legislature they are investing in to attempt to flip one or both chambers to Democrats for the first time in 60 years. The Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee had previously announced it was targeting 15 races across the state, but on Wednesday announced it is adding two more races to that list. Amelia Cortez in the Arizona House of Representatives contest for Legislative District 23 and Amelia Galitano in the race for the Arizona Senate in Legislative District 2. Cortez hopes to unseat GOP State Representative Michelle Pena, who 2 years ago received only 592 more votes than her Democratic seatmate, Maria Sandoval, in a district that leans Democratic. Galitano, meanwhile, is aiming to oust Republican State Senator Shauna Bollock in LD2. In 2024, Bollock beat her Democratic challenger by 3,700 votes, or roughly 3.6%. Arizona's legislature has long been a target of national Democratic organizations seeking to flip either chamber, which has been in GOP control since 1966. Arizona Democrats are within striking distance of flipping Arizona blue for the first time since the 1960s. The Arizona legislature is home to the nation's most extreme MAGA Republicans, and Arizonans are sick of their state legislators chasing conspiracy theories and attacking their rights instead of focusing on the real issues. DLCC President Heather Williams said in a statement announcing the new candidate endorsements. Flipping the legislature in Arizona will allow Democrats to drive the agenda for the first time since the civil rights era and will unlock incredible progress for Arizonans. The DLCC has chipped away cycle over cycle at Republican stronghold, and we are proud to stand by our slate of target candidates to get the job done, Williams said. In 2023, the DLCC announced record-high investments in 2024 races in an effort to flip the legislature, which at the time Republicans controlled by just a single seat in both chambers. Pro-Democratic groups spent more than $10 million backing legislative candidates in the Grand Canyon state, though the efforts weren't successful. Republicans increased their majorities in both chambers. This year, the DLCC plans to target legislative districts 2, 4, 9, 13, 16, 17, and 23. In the Senate, they plan to target legislative districts 2, 4, 9, 13, 17, and 23. To do so, The DLCCC said it will be working with the Democratic caucus of both chambers to try to deliver the new majorities, with Democrats running in every legislative district across the state. The DLCC has not been open about how much it intends to spend in Arizona, but the organization is planning to raise $50 million for its efforts nationwide. Democrats are comparing it to a similar Republican effort, specifically citing the 2010 Republican Project Red Map, which used an influx of money, attack ads, partisan gerrymandering, and mapping software to secure wins for Republican candidates across the country. Arizona is one of seven battleground states being targeted by the DLCC, along with Alaska, Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and New Hampshire. The following Democratic candidates are listed as being part of the slate of targeted races: Amelia Cortez, LD 23 House, Stephanie Simosek, LD2 House, Karen Gresham, LD4 House, Tammy Caputi, LD4 House, Lorena Austin, LD9 House, Jacob Martinez, LD9 House, Raquel Rocky Armstrong, LD13 House, Jacob Weinberg, LD13 House, Julia Romero Gussie, LD16 House, Kevin Vogt, LD17 House, Hollis Holly Lyon, LD17 House, Dr. Amelia Galitano, LD2 Senate, Aaron Lieberman, LD4 Senate, Kiana Sears, LD9 Senate, Christy O'Brien, LD13 Senate, Edgar Soto, LD17 Senate, Brian Fernandez, LD23 Senate. And that concludes this story. Democrats target two more Arizona races to bid to end GOP's 60-year grip on the legislature. Next up, Republicans make their final case for the Arizona Supreme Court to revive voucher measure. Prop 145's backers urge justices to ignore Republicans' admissions that it was meant to kill a rival initiative. By Jim Small, August 11, 2026. A trial court judge incorrectly kicked a proposed constitutional amendment to protect private school voucher money for students in military families off the ballot because he read in two sections, quote, in isolation, rather than as part of the whole. Attorneys for GOP lawmakers and parents of voucher recipients told the Arizona Supreme Court. The core of the legal battle centers around whether a ballot measure called Proposition 145 violates the Arizona Constitution's separate amendment rule, which demands that proposed constitutional amendments be limited to a single action. Republican legislators sent the measure to the ballot on the final day of this year's annual legislative session after a failed last-ditch effort to strike a deal with Democratic lawmakers and the Arizona Education Association to enact modest reforms to Arizona's Universal School Voucher Program in exchange for the teachers' union scrapping its ballot measure that would impose sweeping changes to the voucher system. Proposition 145 is ostensibly about protecting money for students in families where a parent is in the military, who make up less than 1% of the state's 100,000 universal voucher recipients, and it would amend the state constitution to bar any law that confiscates any unspent money awarded to the students. But it also says that if any law doing so is approved after November 1 of this year, then the entirety of that law not just the provision affecting students in military families, is voided. And Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Joseph Creamer ruled that means Proposition 212, the Protect Education Act, would be immediately struck down if voters approve it in the November 3rd election. That measure's reforms for the billion-dollar voucher program include background checks and safety standards for private schools taking voucher money, a $150,000 income cap for students to access the vouchers, and restrictions on spending voucher money on luxury items. But it would also take back unspent voucher funds for all students that families are saving for college tuition, which is currently allowed, and outlaw the practice going forward. Creamer concluded that the second section of Prop 145, which directs courts to ignore the Constitution's allocation of legislative power and fully void any future law that confiscates voucher money from military families, went far beyond the scope of the first section, which makes it unconstitutional to take that money from those students. And that means it effectively consists of two different amendments, violating the state's separate amendment rule. In their final filing, urging the High Court to overturn the judge's ruling and return Proposition 145 to the November ballot, the measure's backers invoked the, quote, whole text canon that the late U.S. Supreme Court Judge Antonin Scalia and lexicographer Brian A. Garner detailed in their 2012 book, Reading the Law, which presents their textualist principles applicable to the analysis of all legal texts. A nut and a bolt appear unrelated too, if judged separately. Attorneys Thomas Bazile and Anthony Napolitano, representing the GOP lawmakers and the military families, respectively, wrote in their reply brief, when read as the whole text canon instructs, sections A and B accomplish a single objective. A draws the line, B voids any law that crosses it. And doing that, prescribing a rule and the consequences for violating that rule is commonplace in Constitution writing. The second section, declaring any voucher reform efforts completely unconstitutional if they touch money to military families, is needed, they argued, because it changes the incentives for future legislatures or ballot initiatives instead of merely offering after-the-fact relief if the proposed amendment included just the first section. And since courts won't be able to leave in place portions of such a law that don't impact the military family voucher money, a rational legislature would draft around military family accounts. Beware the indirect attacks. In a separate filing on behalf of the military family parents, in response to a friend of the court filing from legislative Democrats, Napolitano and his colleagues at the Goldwater Institute, the libertarian think tank and litigation firm that crafted the voucher program and wrote Proposition 145, discussed how that second section is critical to implementing the first section. Although the first section of the proposed amendment would outlaw direct confiscation of the voucher money for military families, those funds can be attacked indirectly. Restrictions could be placed on where money can be spent. Fines can be imposed on schools that accept voucher money, or regulatory burdens could be implemented. Those kinds of regulations would leave the voucher's value hollowed out for military families, even if they don't directly take the money from them. Thus, Napolitano argued, the two sections advance the identical principle, safeguarding military family scholarship funds from legislative erosion. The indirect attacks theory is a new argument and is the most developed attempt to give the second section an independent purpose within the confines of protecting vouchers for military families. It's also in obvious tension with the trial court record, where Napolitano seemed to concede during oral argument that Prop 145 would completely nullify laws that have no effect on military families, including Prop 212. The filing also urged the Supreme Court to disregard the Democrats' litany of quotes from GOP lawmakers who openly conceded during debate on the legislation that created Prop 145 that their goal was to preemptively invalidate the Protect Education Act and use a perceived support for military families as the vehicle to do so. Napolitano downplayed those statements as, quote, melodrama that does not alter the amendment's objective text. Making excuses. In their final filing responding to a pair of friend of the court briefs from conservative organizations, the voucher reform advocates who sued to kick Prop 145 off the ballot cast the measure's backers as increasingly desperate. The pro-voucher Arizona Free Enterprise Club and school choice advocacy group EdChoice make excuse after excuse for the Republican-controlled legislature's decision to cynically exploit goodwill toward military families to serve an entirely different purpose. Their arguments prove only that saving Prop 145 requires eviscerating the separate amendment test, attorneys Sam Bodule and Daniel Adelman wrote. These are the final filings in the legal fight over Prop 145, and there will be no oral arguments. The Supreme Court is expected to rule before August 20th, the final date for ballots to be sent to the printers in advance of the November 3rd election. And that concludes this story. Republicans make their final case for the Arizona Supreme Court to revive voucher measure. And our next story is about election 2020. Judge dismisses Arizona fake electors case, but leaves door open for a new prosecution. Whether Attorney General Chris Mays can seek new indictments hinges on her winning re-election in November. By Gloria Rebecca Gomez, August 11, 2026. A Maricopa County judge has dismissed the criminal case against Arizona's 11 fake electors, but left the door open for future indictments, though whether that happens depends on the outcome of November's election. 2 years ago, Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays filed charges against the 11 fake electors who signed a document falsely awarding Donald Trump the state's electoral votes following the 2020 election that Joe Biden won, as well as seven other people close to Trump and his campaign who orchestrated the scheme. Among those indicted by a grand jury were State Senator Jake Hoffman, former State Senator Anthony Kern, Turning Point Action COO Tyler Bauer, then AZGOP Chairwoman Kelly Ward, and top Trump allies Rudy Giuliani and Mark Meadows. Trump later issued dozens of pardons to fake electors in Arizona and other battleground states that he lost in 2020 that shielded them from federal prosecution. A handful of state-level efforts were all that remained to hold them accountable. But the Arizona criminal case was foiled last year when Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Sam Myers dismissed the indictments, siding with the fake electors who said that prosecutors left out critical information when presenting the case to jurors. They argued the jurors should have been given a copy of the 1887 Electoral Count Act, which they claimed absolved them of wrongdoing. The 138-year-old law details how Congress should deal with multiple slates of electors from a single state. Mays unsuccessfully petitioned the Arizona Supreme Court to reverse that decision, leaving her with little choice but to seek new indictments. On Tuesday, Myers issued a final ruling dismissing the case, but he rejected multiple requests from the defendants to dismiss the case with prejudice, which would have barred Mays from reviving the challenge in the future with new indictments. In his ruling, Myers wrote that claims from the fake electors that they'd been forced to sacrifice time, money, and their emotional well-being weren't sufficient to stop the state from seeking legal redress later. Defendants have cited, among other factors, the passage of time, the amount of money spent, the stress caused to the defendants, fundamental fairness, and the interests of justice, Myers wrote. While the court does not discount the significance of those circumstances, the court finds the interests of justice do not require a dismissal with prejudice. But whether Mays will be able to see a new series of indictments through will depend on whether voters award her another 4-year term in November. The Democrat is hopeful to fend off a challenge from Gilbert Republican Warren Peterson, the head of the Arizona Senate, who is unlikely to pursue the same legal path. Peterson is an election denier who helped launch the state's legislature's partisan audit of the 2020 election that sought to provide evidence that the election was rigged against Trump. It ultimately found no evidence of election fraud and concluded that Biden defeated Trump. And that concludes this story. Judge dismisses Arizona fake electors case, but leaves door open for a new prosecution. And finally, we have one more update on the primary elections. Sham Green Party candidates win primary races over party-backed write-ins. The Green Party said it is planning to file clean elections complaints against the candidates for their apparent violations of public campaign finance rules. By Caitlin Sievers, August 6, 2026. The only Green Party candidates who made it onto Arizona's primary ballot for governor and secretary of state, and who the party disavowed as frauds, won their races against Green Party-backed write-in candidates. In the July 21 primary election, Risa Lombardo took the governor's race with 430 votes to Green Party-endorsed write-in candidate Carlos Melendez, 202 votes, according to final vote counts released by the Secretary of State's office after the counts were finalized Thursday. Dwayne Collier won the Green Party nomination for Secretary of State with 421 votes to Green Party endorsed John Ralston's 217 write-in votes. The Arizona Green Party is disappointed but not surprised to hear that Arizona Republican-backed fraudulent sham candidates Risa Lombardo and Dwayne Collier have won their respective races for governor and secretary of state. Ralston, the Arizona Green Party's recorder, told the Arizona Mirror in a statement. In what's expected to be a tight race between Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs and Republican gubernatorial nominee Andy Biggs, votes for a third-party candidate could swing the outcome. With Green Party candidates typically appealing to liberal or left-of-center voters who don't like the Democratic Party's nominee, that could mean fewer ballots cast for Hobbs. Lombardo and Collier both say they're genuine Green Party candidates, but both of their campaigns have worked hand-in-hand with Arizona's Republican campaign machine, while seemingly violating clean elections rules and sending huge chunks of public campaign funding to a shadowy, brand new Nevada business. Lombardo was a Republican precinct committeewoman, an elected position that is typically held by people who are highly involved in partisan politics, from October 2024 until days before she registered with the Green Party and filed a statement of interest to run for governor on March 5, 2025. Although she told the Mirror in April that they were divorced, as of May, Lombardo still shared a North Phoenix address with dedicated Republican activist Michael Lombardo, a member of the Maricopa County Republican Committee's ultra-grassroots team. The Mirror could find no records that the couple had divorced. Both Lombardo and Collier were registered Republicans as of the 2024 general election. Both candidates gathered enough $5 donations to qualify for public clean elections campaign funding. Ahead of the primary, Lombardo received about $1.1 million in public campaign funding, and Collier got nearly $296,000. The two campaigns spent the vast majority of that money in large payments in June and July to Bootstrap Campaigns, a Nevada business with no online footprint that was created May 12th. As of August 5th, Lombardo had paid more than $1 million and Collier had paid more than $270,000 to the business for a wide range of campaign services like photography, videography, mailers, and get-out-the-vote canvassing. As of July 21, both campaigns had less than $100 in cash on hand. No other candidates running for federal office or in Arizona or Nevada have reported making payments to Bootstrap Campaigns. When the company was created, a man named David Wilson was its president, secretary, and director, and Brian McPartland was its treasurer. But 10 days later, corporate documents were amended to list a man named Christopher Silva as holding all four offices. Attempts to identify Silva were unsuccessful, but David Wilson and McPartland experienced Republican political campaign consultants who have worked together in California. The Arizona Green Party is a small party of dedicated activists, Ralston said in the statement. However, we were unable to overcome the immense amount of money these two candidates were able to raise, as well as the coordination with, presumably, Republican operatives to send out mass communications, as well as placing a large volume of signage in high-traffic areas of major metropolitan areas next to other Republican candidates. Together, the Lombardo and Collier campaigns paid $7,500 to Republican election attorney Tim Lasota in legal fees, and the campaign paid $3,000 apiece to Financial and Treasury Services, LLC, which was created on May 30th, and whose principal agent is Tim Seifert, a former communications director for the Arizona Republican Party. And we're going to have to leave it there because that's all the time we have for the August 13th, 2026 edition of the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. Thank you so much for joining us this week. Stay tuned for more great programming from Sun Sounds of Arizona, and we'll look forward to having you back with us next week. Bye-bye.